Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
If American military forces enjoy technological advantages over everybody else, they started with research. In fact, the Defense Department is one of the biggest supporters of basic research it hopes will lead to future advantages. Each year, it awards grants to some of the top researchers and engineers. They're known as National Security Science and Engineering Faculty Fellows. Joining me with more on the program, Dr. Melissa Flagg, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research, and chemist Chad Merkin of Northwestern University, a faculty fellow specializing in nanotechnology. Good to have you both on.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us, first of all, Dr. Flagg, how are the fellows are chosen each year?
An open competition, so we lovingly call it the funding opportunity announcement, and it is posted on grants.gov every year. Applicants can be any faculty member with tenure or full-time research staff living in the U.S. or a U.S. citizen, and we accept white papers in the first stage. We have reviewers here within the Department of Defense at organizations like DARPA, the Office of Naval Research, Air Force Office of Scientific Research, and the Army Research Office, as well as reviewers that we reach out to from the National Science Foundation or the Department of Energy. We choose the most compelling white papers. We go back and by invitation request full proposals, and from those proposals down select to the final group of faculty fellows.
Now, you mentioned that this is basic research, but the areas in which people do research must have some relation to something DOD might eventually need.
Absolutely. When we think about basic research, we are a mission organization, and so our basic research office identifies very rapidly moving, emerging topics within the life sciences and physical sciences or information sciences that we believe will truly affect our long-range future capabilities in the department. So topic areas might include quantum information sciences, which is very basic now, but we can imagine would give us capabilities to truly revolutionize the speed at which we do quantum computing or possibly create new sensing capabilities. We invest in areas like nanoscience, and Chad can talk to you more about that, as well as areas as broad as applied mathematics, where we think about new network capabilities, electronic or functional structural materials, where we think about totally new capabilities that nature hasn't even dreamed up yet. Oceanography, manufacturing science, robotics, neuroscience, all of these have the potential to really revolutionize the kinds of capabilities we can even think about right now.
And Dr. Merkin, tell us a little bit about your work and how you came to be a fellow here.
Well, we are working on a new idea in really all of science, and that is developing a new way of making materials. Materials are central to everything we do, everything we rely on, both in the DoD and in the civilian world. Normally, we make materials by using the elements that are in the periodic table, and we learn how to do the proper chemistry to build structures that work for our needs. In the NISF program, we're looking at a new way of building structures. We're asking the question, can we begin to use tiny particles, structures called nanoparticles, made of different types of materials, including natural materials like proteins and enzymes. And then we're learning how to attach DNA and using effectively genetic codes to assemble those particles into functional architectures. And so the idea is to try to take lessons from biology, merge them into chemistry and material science, and learn how to build materials in a fundamentally new way. And those materials could have impact in many areas spanning the development of new types of light harvesting structures, new lenses, for example, that can interact with light in unusual ways and bend light in unusual ways for purposes down the road that have yet to be conceived, but could lead to lots of advances, for example, in future types of computing, to new types of catalysts that can take important feedstocks, for example, and turn them into useful chemicals and structures that can fuel all sorts of needs.
And does a grant as a National Security Science and Engineering Faculty Fellow help you with collaboration, especially with other elements in the federal government. For example, NIST has a big nanotechnology program going. So does this grant kind of help you get in tune with others doing similar work?
Yeah, there are several key features of the program that I want to emphasize. You know, the first is the magnitude. So this allows you to really go after a big problem. So it's a much larger grant than what you typically get with the conventional funding mechanism. So you can look at a big problem, one that's going to take a significant amount of time, and try to solve it. Number two is you can establish interactions not just with other federal agencies, but within the DOD in particular. So this is a great opportunity for researchers to begin to establish interactions with research labs within the DOD and to combine expertise and learn from one another, learn about each other's interests, about each other's problems, and look at how we can take some of the techniques that we're developing and impact DOD research as well as you mentioned other agency research. And then the third is just experiences in terms of going back and forth and spending time at the labs and really finding out where we can make a difference and how we can implement these most effectively.
We're speaking with chemist Chad Merkin of Northwestern University. He's a National Security Science and Engineering Faculty Fellow, and Dr. Melissa Flagg is Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research. And Dr. Flagg, when you see the results of this research, what happens to that intellectual property? Suppose that it is applicable to something that could be built at some point, but the university is not the one that might be able to build it. It could be some large company. So how does that process all work?
Absolutely. I think the comment that Chad made about bringing the NISA fellows into the department laboratories to engage with our scientists and engineers who think much more about sort of the direct applications to what that future warfighter might need is a huge opportunity. We're also looking at new opportunities to bring small companies and large companies into a collaborative space going forward as well, because we understand that these sort of opportunities for speeding up innovation, going from ideas to use-inspired and, you know, sort of outputs to actually turning it into a capability requires a very broad community. And so we're trying to build more opportunities for those conversations and ideas to flow across those boundaries. I think the other thing to remember here is that basic research in the Department of Defense is truly about pushing the limits of our understanding and expanding the envelope of what we know is possible. We have to take risk now in this aspect of our portfolio to ensure that the warfighter of the future also has a technological advantage. We don't maintain our tech advantage by simply engineering on what we understand already. We really ensure that long-range advantage by truly coming up with and creating fundamentally new opportunities.
Now, there is also a third offset strategy that has been launched by the Secretary of Defense to try to come up with the next wave of advantages here. It's been some years since they've had this type of thing. Does this tie in with the third offset strategy in some way?
Absolutely. The foundations of, I think, any offset strategy, as the Secretary and the Deputy Secretary discuss regularly, truly is thinking about asymmetric advantage. It's about looking at parity, looking at sort of how the world currently does business, and trying to step out of that and create fundamentally new opportunities and new competitive advantages for our warfighters. And so this program specifically, along with our broader basic research portfolio, is really about attracting the absolute best scientists in our country with the most compelling ideas that can really expand what we believe is possible for an asymmetric advantage in the future, and to focus those on our challenges, on our wicked hard problems. And I do think that these ideas and taking this risk now and giving people a long period of time to commit to them really does open our aperture and expand that foundation for truly revolutionary capabilities in the future.
And Dr. Merkin, how does this translate down to the students that you interact with? Does it help give them maybe a little bit better understanding of the needs of national security, which is something, frankly, a lot of college students may not even know about or have a lot of sympathy with?
Oh, it's an incredible experience across the board. One is, as I said, they get to work on a program that is focused on a longer-term goal. And to really look at a big problem. But the other is the direct experience with the labs. And it's led to a lot of additional collaborations as well. So that there is a leveraging effect here as we begin to establish interactions between our group and other labs around the country. Wright-Patterson, for example, we just started a center of excellence that now has many collaborations that go beyond even the NISA fellowship project. That's led to a leveraging that's really quite substantial, where many students, not just a couple of students that are involved with the fellowship, have a chance to work with researchers from Wright-Patt and to look at how some of their, again, basic research projects can have an impact in the military and security.
Dr. Chad Merkin is a National Security Science and Engineering Faculty Fellow with Northwestern University, and Dr. Melissa Flagg is Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.
You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Congress has been skeptical of so-called green initiatives in the military, like self-powered bases or ships and planes running on alternate fuels. Some members feared those moves could weaken military strength. But now the Navy's top energy official says he's noticing a change in the way Congress responds. We get more now from Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni.
Just 3 months ago, the Navy deployed its Great Green Fleet. The fleet is the first carrier group to run on energy-efficient systems, procedures, and alternative fuel. That alternative fuel includes nuclear power and a biofuel made from beef fat and gas. The Defense Department spends about $2.05 per gallon, with a 14-cent subsidy from the Agriculture Department. In the past, the Great Green Fleet may have been something a Republican-dominated Congress would have tried to stop, or at least taken a good look into. But Assistant Navy Secretary for Energy, Installations, and Environment, Dennis McGinn, says Congress is coming around. Here's McGinn during a speech at the Atlantic Council in Washington.
It is changing up on the Hill. I use as evidence the interaction at Secretary Mabus's posture hearings before the Senate Armed Services Committee as well as the House Armed Services Committees of about 6 weeks ago. It just wasn't the heated issue about energy. I am looking forward this afternoon to appear before the Senate Armed Services Committee subcommittee on readiness to talk about not just our energy portfolio, but environment, as well as our installations portfolio, military construction, and modernization. And we get a lot of good ideas from our Army and Air Force counterparts, and we adopt them. We get together on a fairly regular basis to compare notes, and it's really something that is affecting the entire Department of Defense, not just the Department of the Navy.
The Navy has set out some serious goals for energy efficiency in the future. Navy Secretary Ray Mabus set goals for reaching 50% total energy consumption from alternate sources by 2050. He also wants the Navy to produce at least 50% of its shore-based requirements from alternative sources by 2020. Of course, that may seem strange to invest so heavily in an alternative fuel source when petroleum around the world is dropping below $40 a barrel and at times below $30 a barrel. McGinn has an answer for that.
We don't gauge our efforts thinking about the next quarterly report or next annual report or even the next election cycle. We think beyond that, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road, and we determine what is the kind of security environment in which our Navy and Marine Corps expeditionary team needs to prevail. And what we see in that that down the road, over the horizon environment is a lot of competition for regular petroleum-based fuel
in the next 25 to 30 years, an increase in the world's population from over 7 billion today to 9 billion by 2050, and increasing prices for all energy sources and competition for those energy sources. So it makes sense if we can diversify our portfolio.
With sequestration constantly threatening and the military shifting to the Asia Pacific, saving money and getting the most out of each cent makes sense. The more money the Navy can save, the more it can spend on other things, especially if sequestration happens again. As far as the Asia Pacific, well, it's no small place. The Navy's going to consume more resources roaming around the Pacific Ocean. The Navy isn't the only one looking to save energy either. The Defense Department as a whole has been looking into cutting back as well. Here's Phyllis Catino, director of the Clean Energy Initiative at the Pew Charitable Trusts.
As of 2015, DoD had reduced its facility energy intensity almost 18% from 2003 levels. They've procured 12% of their electricity from renewable resources. Assistant Secretary McGinn, I still want to call you Admiral, talked about the Navy being ahead of meeting its 1 gigawatt goal. Petroleum consumption and the base vehicle fleet's been reduced by 34%, 64 million gallons of gas annually. So you have energy savings projects, which have gone up to 1,300 between 2010 and 2012. I mean, it's really remarkable. 50% of all microgrids here in the United States are deployed on military bases. So this is really an enduring proposition, which, as I said, you know, the Navy has been a real leader.
The Navy's now trying to expand its use of green technologies for even more savings. One place the Navy's looking, according to McGinn, is microgrids, which are small electricity distribution systems. The Navy wants to pair them with storage capability and put in power monitoring and control systems. That will allow the service to change the load of electricity it's using, change the sources of power, and blend them in an optimal way. The Navy's looking closely and even appealing to industry to develop technologies and products for the Navy. Here's McGinn.
That great phrase from Field of Dreams. We say, if you build it, we will come. If you build a biorefinery, we have a demand for biofuel to put in our ships and our aircraft and our Navy and Marine Corps. If you build a solar field or geothermal capability or wind capability, we want to access that where it makes sense and where there's a business case. So our work with the private sector, I'll give you a specific example. We were given a goal in May of 2014 that by the end of 2015, Secretary Babis wanted us to have in various stages of procurement over 1 gigawatt of renewable energy. Well, we achieved that. We're up at we got to 1.1 gigawatts, and we're considering that a floor, not a ceiling. And we did that almost exclusively with private-public partnerships.
Not everyone's completely convinced, however. Brian Slattery, a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation, says DoD's strategy should be guided by what is making the most capable military to defend the U.S. interests. Slattery's concern focusing on green policies could cloud DoD's judgment. He says it's kind of like putting climate change on top of everything else DoD is already doing. It will just further the burden on military planners. But McGinn says going green is in the military and the United States' best interest. Here he is again.
The business case is so powerful. The warfighting business case, the fiscal business case, it just makes sense. And it's unfortunate that years ago energy was so politicized, but I think we're getting over that very, very quickly, and people are realizing that we're doing this not just because we're closet tree huggers or anything like that. We are, but it is because we are in the business of fielding the most expeditionary capable Navy and Marine Corps team we possibly can.
In Washington, Scott Massioni, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin.